Hi there, my name is Mary Killalea. Welcome to the To Be Bolder podcast, providing career insights for the next generation of women in business and tech. To Be Bolder was created out of my love for technology and marketing, my desire to bring together like-minded women, and my hope to be a great role model and source of inspiration for my two girls and other young women like you. Encouraging you guys to show up and to be bolder and to know that anything you guys dream of, it's totally possible. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation. Hi, thanks for tuning in. I am excited to have Rachel Frick on today's show. Rachel is a leader in the tech industry, currently over at Amazon Web Services as the head of storage and observability partner marketing. Rachel has an impressive track record from her time at Intel Corporation, building and launching the cross-portfolio competitive marketing office, to her strategic role in partner marketing with Microsoft while she was there. And Rachel's career is a blueprint of innovation and strategic growth in tech. Her journey from her educational roots in computer science at UC Santa Barbara to her current leadership role reflects a deep commitment to tech innovation and customer-centric strategies. Rachel, thanks for being here. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so great to spend time with you today.
Cool. Okay. Well, start with your telling us about your journey to get to AWS and what a typical day is.
Yeah, you bet. So as you mentioned, I started in computer science in college. I was not intimidated by technology growing up. We had computers in the house. We had a computer in the household when I was in high school, which was really, really rare. Mm-hmm. And when I got to college, I went to an all-girls university my first year, and I worked for tech support. And at the time, the most common call you would get for tech support was somebody's computer was unplugged, and they just didn't even think to plug it in. Or if you can remember, there was a floppy disk in the tower, which means your computer wouldn't boot because it was trying to build a floppy disk. And people just thought I was this computer whiz because I could solve these problems. And I was always scratching my head of like, this is not that deep. So I went down the computer science track because at the time, it just seemed really easy. Mm-hmm. I eventually transferred into UC Santa Barbara, and that's where I really met the cream of the crop, like within my world at the time. I mean, these folks, their parents were some of the lead engineers within the Silicon Valley area. And we were pulling all-nighters on a regular basis, just coding our brains out. And by the time I wrapped up my degree, I did not want to program anymore. And I got so lucky that Intel had emailed the UC system a program. It was a rotation program where they were looking for engineers that had some speaking skills, some like people skills, mm-hmm. honestly, at the time. And I was just so thankful to find something where I could use my tech background and I could not have to program all night anymore. Mm-hmm. But the crazy thing was coming into Intel, I had really never used PowerPoint. I had barely written anything my entire life. I'd been living in a terminal for the last couple of years. And I remember having an executive, and I knew nothing about corporate America. I spent my summers lifeguarding in college. Mm-hmm. I never had a real internship. And I remember not having a senior leader at Intel at one point say like, hey, do you need any like help since you've gotten here? And I remember asking, yeah, can you help me with PowerPoint? And later I was at a happy hour and folks were like, did you seriously ask him for help with that? I'm like, I don't understand how the hierarchy.
Right. Right.
And I was there at Intel for 17 years and it was just amazing. But all of a sudden 1 year, 17 just felt like a really big number. And I couldn't believe I'd been at the same place for 17 years. So I started doing some soul searching and reflecting on what I wanted to do next. I didn't want to spend my entire career at one place. I was lucky enough to do a lot of roles in partner marketing. So I knew cultures of other companies were really different. And I wasn't totally sure where I wanted to pop over next. Somebody recommended the book Working Backwards. It's by Colin Breyer and Bill Carr. And they're two gentlemen who were at Amazon and they've left Amazon. And they have heard from many people since they left that the peculiar culture at Amazon is not repeatable. And they wanted to write a book. Well, actually, it's very repeatable. It just people choose not to take a stab at it, I think. And I've heard since I've been in Amazon that actually a lot of things we do here, they do happen, but it's in the minority of companies. I had known things like Amazon writes narratives. Everything is doc writing. We don't do PowerPoint. And I thought that was terrifying, intimidating, gross. I mean, at this point, I had spent 17 years of PowerPoint.
Right, right.
The thought of having to write an essay was so intimidating. When I read Working Backwards and I understood why Amazon writes narratives, I was so curious. I really wanted to experience this. There was a chapter about the hiring practices over here. And I thought back at Intel, and honestly, lots of companies, when you're doing hiring, it could look different from team to team to team that you're supporting. Amazon's got a really grueling interview process that they do. It's difficult and it's stressful and it's tested. I mean, they've got a bar, and when they look at candidates coming in, you have to be at 50%, kind of equivalent to 50% of employees or better, because Amazon believes that you should always be raising the bar of your employees, which, what like an incredible way to think about hiring practices.
Yeah.
Like, not are you great for this job, but are you going to raise the bar of the team you're entering? It was little things like that in the book where I was just, again, so curious to come experience it. And then the other piece was, I was talking to a friend who was at Intel. We were cube neighbors forever ago. And she'd been in Amazon now for about 3 years. And talking to her, she was a different human after 3 years at Amazon. And she was still here. And she still is here. I work for her and her org today. But hearing her speak about the leadership principles just so naturally, like you could just feel that the people here, they really believe the leadership principles. They practice them every single day. And I wanted to experience this. So I worked really hard and I went through the interviews here called the loop. And then I came over. So yeah. And then you asked about like a typical day over at Amazon, and it's a mix. I mean, it's a lot of meetings, as you can imagine, but a lot of the meetings are around doc reads. So you do spend a lot of time writing. I've had to figure out just for myself, like, what is the best time of day where I can write versus when I can just do one-on-ones versus team meetings versus like actual doc reads. I mean, you can't really plan your doc reads, but I did find that my best writing is around 10 PM at night. My headspace is clear. So I do have to kind of modify my days a little bit depending on what I have to get done that week. When you've got a big idea at Amazon, you dig into the data and you put a narrative together. Or if you've got a big message you need to land, like my first couple quarters here, I was finding a lot of information and I had to articulate that to leadership. So I would have to put it into a narrative. And so you join these meetings and they're just such a phenomenal experience. But you join a meeting and you send everyone a link to the document and everybody goes silent for 5, 10, 20 minutes. Everybody reads the doc and then you discuss it.
Oh, wow.
And it's, so we do a lot of those per week. Mm-hmm. And the first couple times you do it, the awkward silence is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then you get to a point quarters later where somebody does a PowerPoint randomly, maybe a partner does a PowerPoint. Uh-huh. And you're like, in your head, you're like, I wish they just put this in a doc. Like, I wish I could just see all the data and I could just I could internalize it on my own time. Mm-hmm. And then we could just hash it out for a little bit, as opposed to kind of watching somebody go through a presentation. It's a very different mindset. So, you know, a lot of my week is it's looking at data. It's kind of putting ideas together. It's maybe doing a doc read. The doc reads are probably at most every other week, big ones, maybe once a month. It's really when people have something really big that they want to share. But some of these docs like that I've been a part of, they can take 3 months to put together because they're really that thoughtful. Mm-hmm. And the amount of input you're gathering along the ways, usually while like a primary doc, like an author, and then you're meeting every week to keep like putting this thing together. And then you'll do a doc read with think of like a sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. You do your dockery with a small group of people who touch it at a day to day. And then you get all their feedback and incorporate it. You read it again. And then you go to the next kind of layer of your sphere of influence and you have all of them review it. And then you make it up to leadership to ultimately you're trying to get a decision. I've been a part of a doc just recently that we've been working on for quarters, and we're just going up the management chain until we're getting buy-in for budget for 2024.
And that is so interesting to me because obviously, you know, I'm trained on a different approach. Do they have like a decision-making tree so you know who's inputters, who's, you know, the D on it? Because I would think that would be challenging to navigate and negotiate points that you're trying to influence.
Yeah, typically you'll know going into it based on what you're asking for, who mm-hmm. your decision maker is going to be. And at Amazon, we are highly transparent on your grade level. So a lot of times you'll be in a group of L6s and then you're going to take it to your sphere of influences. Then you're going to go to L7s. Then you go to L8s. We don't have L9. And then you go to L10. Like if it's a $10, $11, $12 million ask, you're going to go to your L10.
Sure.
But your doc better be flawless. No spelling errors, super tight, maybe 10, 12 pages of data, like just your appendices of all the information, because people are jumping around looking at your appendices. It's wild, but you do it enough and you're like, you really grow an appreciation for it.
Oh, I could only imagine just your writing skills, your thought thinking process skills that would definitely develop. Do they use acronyms is around a lot? Because I think
a little bit, but in a doc, you have to spell it out the first time. And if you don't, you'll get comments of like, please spell this out. And I've been here for almost a year and a half. And even in December, when I had some downtime, I went back and I was retaking doc writing classes because doc writing is such a big deal here. And at Amazon, we have a thing called a doc bar raiser, where if you write enough docs and you do enough training and you've got to get certified internally to be a doc bar raiser. And then when people are seeking help, you're part of a master list of doc bar raisers and people come ask you for help. But it's a bit of a process because you have to have authored many docs yourself before you can get to that status. So I spent some time in December kind of going back and relooking at some of the training and resources that we have.
Are there external trainings or classes that you would recommend for someone who's on the outside looking in to kind of, I guess, hone that skill prematurely?
Yeah. That's a wonderful question. And I don't know. We have so much resources internally. Uh-huh. I've never looked. I'd be more than happy to look afterwards. I would bet though, there's probably some really cool stuff on like YouTube. There's a lot of ex-Amazonians that have published content on YouTube. In fact, when I was interviewing, the number one resource was YouTube. Mm-hmm. There are so many we have bar raisers for the interview process. And there's a lot of ex-bar raisers that just talk about like how to prepare.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to include that book that you said, Working Backwards.
Working Backwards. Yeah, there's lots of great Amazon books, but that one was my favorite.
Oh, that's cool. So, you know, you talked a little bit about, you know, the different places that you work. I never really thought about partner marketing giving you that exposure to other companies. That's cool. So when you're dealing with a partner, tell me what is like your role and how do you navigate, I guess, serving two companies?
Yeah.
Two companies. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd say it's really different actually when you're dedicated to an account or a partner versus when you're managing a team of partner managers. That's been kind of different for me over here. At Intel, I was on account teams where you're just, whether you're a people manager or an individual contributor, you're dedicated to that account. I covered IBM for years, and IBM is North Carolina. It's very old fashioned, super formal. We wore suits. You were in the office by 8 a.m. But like you could see being in the office, we mirrored how we showed up to work, and our personalities mirrored our partner. Mm-hmm. And then when I covered Microsoft, it was very similar. I mean, I was showing up looking one way the first quarter or so. And by the end, I was dressing like Microsoft. And they're in hoodies and tennis shoes. So there's like elements of that. I also think in both of those roles, I spent most of my time with the partner. I spent way more time in front of the partner on site in meetings, planning, whiteboarding, helping them with their execution than I did in any internal meetings. Plus, you're on an account team. That's what Intel was functioned at the time. If you were a partner marketing role, many of them sat on the account teams. Mm-hmm. And so when you would join an internal meeting, I often felt like I was Microsoft in mm-hmm. the meeting. I am here to represent Microsoft, and I would fight and I would advocate for my partner aggressively because you're in a meeting now sometimes sitting on a call with the person who represents all of Microsoft's peers mm-hmm. Or competitors. And my job is to make sure that Microsoft gets the spotlight. They get the most amount of money. They get the mentions in the keynotes, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So you wear a very different hat. When I was covering IBM, I did that for 4 years and I had a blast and I learned so much about marketing from IBM. But mm-hmm. I did get to a place where I kind of felt like I wanted to know how Intel does marketing. I hadn't done a lot of Intel stuff yet. I'd spent mm-hmm. most of my career at that point actually doing IBM marketing. And I had done a little bit of networking along the ways. And when a job opened up in corporate marketing, I jumped over and I did corporate just to really understand how the Intel engine works. I had no idea, honestly. At AWS, I manage a team of partner marketers. And so a lot of my time is a lot more focused internally, mm-hmm. supporting the folks on my team, or, you know, either helping them with some ideation or solving challenges or thinking through strategy for the next month, the next quarter. At Amazon, we do what we call operational planning. So there's we think about 2024 in the summer of 2023, and there's formal operational planning docs that get done at a leadership level, but we already start kind of chatting about it in the summertime. And then come Q4, the end of the calendar year, we spend a significant amount of time mapping out the next calendar year. And we mm-hmm. put it all into a doc, into a narrative. It's usually 6 pages plus appendices. And that's a ton of fun. I love whiteboarding with like, what are the big things we're going to go do this next year? Mm-hmm. And we'll try and figure that out from kind of a customer point of view, or like, what are the challenges we need to do for customers? And then what are the things we want to help solve for our partners? And then we'll go talk to the partners. And a lot of times it's in parallel, really. We can go talk to partners of like, okay, right now we cover storage. We'll go talk to a storage partner of like, what are the top three things you guys want to get done this year? Mm-hmm. And what, you know, are you looking at top of the funnel acquisition? Are you bottom of the funnel? Then we kind of workshop, okay, based on those top three priorities, where are you thinking through on the kind of the marketing funnel? Then we workshop goals. And then we make sure all of that is reflected back in our operational planning. And so a lot of that is, for me, it's internal. And then I love joining the partner meetings mm-hmm. as it makes sense. And I'll join a lot of QBRs and stuff like that. We have amazing partners, and I joke a lot with my team and some of the partners too. Like one of the categories we cover is storage, and storage is it's a lot of backup and recovery. But the people are phenomenal. Like it's just so they're just such amazing people in the entire ecosystem of folks that I work with.
That's fantastic, and this is so insightful. I appreciate you just like giving all this information. It's awesome. When as a woman in tech. And you move between companies, do you have non-negotiables for, you know, jobs you're going to take on to build your career?
Yeah, I think what I have found, especially with my exposure to other companies along the way, even with Microsoft, because I was covering Microsoft, we'd work with other companies too for mm-hmm. tri-party type activities. Customer obsession is always forefront for me. Mm-hmm. Are we, and is the company really hyper-focused on really pushing their own product? Or focus on transforming things for customers. Mm-hmm. And I think the longer I've been in the industry, the more apparent this really becomes. You can see it through messaging and some of the marketing that goes out. And then you hear it in conversations. It's a big reason why I also came to Amazon and AWS, because it's so much part of the culture. The whole title, Working Backwards, of that book is all about working from what the customer is looking for and how mm-hmm. do I work backwards to get there. In fact, a lot of documentation that we do, we start with a PR FAQ, PR press release, FAQ, you know, facts and questions. So I read a PR FAQ for somebody just right before the holidays started. He's thinking about a new marketing idea for 2024. And so he's thinking through like, what does a partner really need? Mm-hmm. So he actually wrote a PR FAQ. It would never go public, but this is what we're announcing to part today. You know, January 12th, we are announcing that we are going to launch this new program for partners, and you write about what the final thing is going to be. And then you work backwards of like, how do I actually get there?
Mm-hmm. Reverse engineering. I love that.
Yes. It's so great. And a lot of what I was doing at Intel, and especially when I was partnering with Microsoft, was so focused on research on what are some of the coolest challenges out there. Mm-hmm. And when you have the sum of the parts, you know, different companies working together, how can we make magic together and create a really cool solution and storytelling for the end customer? That's the most fun. So when I have looked at different jobs and considered companies, I'm always looking at some of their marketing and how focused are they actually on the end customer, and how does that pull through on their messaging? And then the other piece I look at is I want to have fun. People ask me a lot, like, what's your 5-year plan? And my answer is always, I want to have fun. I really do. I just want to have fun every single day. I want to work. Mm-hmm. And I want to be surrounded by people that want to work and a positive culture. One of my favorite things about Intel was the value, great place to work. Mm-hmm. And I felt very supported in putting effort behind that value. Every team I was on, we found ways to mm-hmm. make sure that the team we were was the best team on the planet. It was a great place to work. So I do look for that in every company. I want to make sure I'm entering a place that is just a happy place to be, somewhere where I can pen.
That is such a, I love the great place to work too. And I think it's harder, one, because of the hybrid culture, even though I'm a huge, huge fan of it. But for some of the younger people who are building careers and, you know, don't get the FaceTime that we, I guess, had the luxury of doing it because mm-hmm. it was more old school. What advice do you have for them in trying to feel a part of the culture and be seen and network?
It's hard.
Yeah, it is hard, isn't it?
I mean, I went through it joining Amazon a year and a half ago. I mean, we were at the endish of the pandemic, but nobody was back in the office yet. So here mm-hmm. I am joining a new company that's wildly different with its narrative culture. Mm-hmm. Amazon is a self-service company. Intel, if you want to know how to do something, you ask somebody. Amazon, if you want to know how to do something, you go find it. We have wikis galore. Think about Wikipedia on steroids. It's only internal. So if you have a process, a tool, whatever, you write a wiki about it. And then if I need to go find out how to use a marketing tool, it's the culture, your self-service. You go find the wiki. Mm-hmm. If anything, like you might Slack some folks of like, hey, does anyone have the wiki to know how to do X? Mm-hmm. And then people will send you the link and then you go read about it. So it's very different. It felt very lonely in the beginning, to be honest. I felt like I spent the first couple months, quarters, just a lot of online reading of how do I do my job? And it would have been so cool if we were just all in the office and I could just ask people. Now, the self-service piece, how much is it different when you're in the office versus just sitting and work from home mm-hmm. remote? I'm not sure. We're just now returning to office and it's been so exhilarating, to be honest, just like being in the office and whiteboarding things. I think for folks coming into all of this, the biggest advice is to get on camera. Mm, it is so different.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating for me when I join meetings and people are like, nah, I don't want to. And it's pretty rare right now. I think everybody has gone through a phase where people just kind of got burned out with the camera. And luckily, most meetings I'm in, people are on camera. But I have heard from folks that at different companies, not here, who have younger teams and people just aren't getting on camera, or that I heard an example like of people just sitting on the floor, like being really informal. Yeah. And there's just something that too, where you just feel like they're not maybe all in
right
professionalism. So I would also say like, just show up professionally, like just, you might be working from home and remote, but show up like you mean it.
100%. 100%. It just boggles my mind when people are on camera. And I get the burnout too, but if you're in a meeting with someone six times in a day and you haven't seen them all day, there's something.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I was in a meeting with the extended storage team just this week. So every other week, we've got everybody's storage on the phone internally together. Almost the entire group, like, I don't know, teens number of people got on camera. And I almost got emotional. I was like, I haven't seen you guys in
right?
like 2 weeks. And even we all live across the United States, but just seeing everybody like just changes the tone of the whole meeting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. What would you tell your 20-year-old self?
When I first started, my motto was always fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. I started in data center. I had never seen a data center. And I kept telling myself, just pretend you know what's going on. If you nod your head and you're just like, oh, yeah, like, uh-huh. And people just assume you have an opinion. When a lot of times I didn't know what they were talking about and I was faking it so hard. It wasn't until much later at my Intel career when I saw people more senior than me asking really basic questions. And it was like a light bulb went on of like, why have I spent at that point, probably 12 years being afraid to ask questions. My husband always tells his team, there's no dumb questions in the first 6 weeks or the first, I think maybe even says like 6 days. He's pretty aggressive, but there's a lot of dumb questions in the first 6 months, like after, if you wait too long. And I have really changed my mindset on asking questions and being really brutally honest with my peers, my team on like, when I don't understand, there's no point in waiting or like taking notes and looking it up later. I think we've all experienced scenarios where we think we're asking a question that nobody knows. And guess what? A lot of people in the room don't know the answer to that question. And I remember being in a face-to-face when I had started Amazon, and I thought I was the newest person there and I shouldn't ask any questions. I'm taking mad notes. And then I finally raised my hand and I'm like, hey, I'm sorry. I'm pretty new here and I don't know what you're talking about. And then a bunch of people nod in their head of like, yeah, we don't know what you're talking about either. Like, you've been here a long time, presenter, and the rest of us aren't following this. Another reminder, like we should all be asking more questions.
Yeah, totally agree. What was the best career advice you've received?
Probably twofold. When I was early into my sales career, I mentioned my job was to advocate for my partners and I would be aggressive. And I would get feisty. And I had a manager one day pull me aside and tell me that people are afraid of me, that I'm coming across really scary in internal meetings. And my first thought was like, yeah, like I'm nailing this job. Like I am scary. And she looks at me just like, that's not the expression I was looking for. And she said, you need to be the leader that people want to follow, not that they want to be afraid of. And instantly I could picture leaders in my head that were terrifying, that nobody wanted to follow. And I could picture leaders in my head that were fun and that they got the job done. They inspired people. And when they jumped to a new org, a sea of people follow them. And I immediately could visualize what she just said. And that kind of slapped me in the face. And really it affected how I showed up. And I had to work on it, but I've really taken that to heart ever since that moment. At Amazon, another piece of advice that I got is I was in a kind of a new hire training, and a lot of people know the Amazon culture it's fast and it's exhausting. And people sometimes don't last because there's a lot of people will talk publicly about just like the burnout that's here. But some of the best advice I got coming here was find something that pulls you away, that forces you to shut down at 5 p.m. because you have to be X. You have whatever it is. Like, I think a lot of people have kids and sports, but it doesn't have to be that. It could be your own sport that you're going to go do, or some kind of like social club that you're a part of, but find something that forces you to walk away from work and just completely check out. And that also majorly changed my mindset in terms of how I view my evenings. I remember earlier in my career, judging parents that, because I didn't have kids yet. And I would be like, why can't you do this 6 p.m. meeting? Aren't you in it with the team? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't know what it was like at all. And I was kind of I had my own thoughts. And I'm so disappointed that that's how and I never expressed them, I don't think publicly, but I thought we should all be hustling and working 50, 60 hours a week. Yeah. But the reality is you don't need to do that. And you show up much more refreshed and energized and I think more efficient when you do take those breaks in the evenings or whatever your schedule looks like. Everyone's schedule looks a little bit different these days. But find those things that pull you away from the office.
That's great advice. I actually took horseback riding lessons because I didn't know how to do it and it was very foreign. And when you're working with a horse, you don't have time to to look at anything else, think about anything else. You got to be very present. So I had heard that advice a while ago too. And I thought, okay, what is something that I need my most attention?
I love it.
Yeah, it was fun. What tips do you have for women looking to get into leadership?
I would say earn trust. Mm. And earning trust at Amazon, it's a leadership principle. And all of our leadership principles, we are constantly challenging each other, reflecting. When we do kind of like 360 feedback, you judge people. Maybe judge is kind of a harsh word, but you are providing feedback to people based on leadership principles. So it really gives you the opportunity to think about each leadership principle differently. So when I think about earning trust, there's so many different ways that you can earn trust with somebody. It can be just by showing up on a regular basis, being on time, being an active listener, being a expert within a domain, providing really thoughtful and strategic feedback. And all these things eventually kind of build up. But by earning trust from others, people they start to build trust with you. And then they start to see you as somebody they can come to as a resource and then a leader. Mm. And I think without being able to earn trust, it kind of goes back to that other conversation we just had about, be the leader that people want to follow, right? So that when you're given a leadership opportunity or if a leadership opportunity opens up, people are like, man, that's somebody that everyone's listening to and that they've got great ideas. They've got great feedback. They're a segment expert and, within their domain. Like these are all really important things. And I love the fact that we have a principle here around earning trust and we're constantly checking in with ourselves and with others on how are we showing up every day, creating an environment where we're earning trust with our stakeholders.
How do you address young women's concerns that tech is a male-dominated field, which adds layers and complexity to already just your career building challenges?
Yeah, I saw that a lot when my career started 20 years ago. When I joined the IBM account team, I was the only female globally. And I was in so many meetings, the only female. It was just like common. And I was used to it because studying computer science, I was, in a class of 200, there's four women. Oh my gosh. Two of them didn't make it. So two of us finished. So when I came to Intel and then I was on the IBM sales team, I was very used to being the only female in the room. In fact, it was kind of like my comfort zone because I stood out a little bit and I could lean in a little bit more. I could raise my hand. People would notice and they'd answer my questions. And I don't experience that at all anymore. I really don't. I would say most meetings that I'm in, conferences that I attend, it's a healthy split. And I also look at my kids. I have two boys and a girl, and the amount they're interested in technology is equal. My kids, they all have after school activities. My daughter's the one who does coding on Wednesdays, on Mondays, I should say. It's like part of their inherent, like just the way that they live these days. They're so tech savvy and they're fearless in technology. I also think the way that we think about tech has really evolved. Technology is now, it's woven into arts and music and education. And so maybe roles that were not traditionally, you know, seemed as tech are now all becoming these tech jobs, and they're incorporating AI. And a lot of the coolest stories you see about these startups, they're, you know, we've seen lots of amazing case studies of teachers that were like, hey, I saw an opportunity to build something. So I built an app myself.
Yeah.
And now we're using it.
Yeah.
So I think it differently about that. I'm just like, it's not a male dominated field, at least not where I sit at Amazon. I don't feel it. And I'm very hopeful that up and coming generations, it's just not a thing anymore. The technology is kind of woven into everything that we do every day. And it's not male versus female.
I love those points. And I love the optimism. Approaching your career, did you take on a strategy, or how did you know?
I did not. No, not at all. In fact, many of the roles I had at Intel, I was the first person to do it. They were new teams that were launching, or they were like when I joined the Microsoft account team, it was a brand new team. I was the first, at the time they called them a marketing development manager. I was the first MDM to join the account team. So I didn't follow anybody, and the role didn't exist. So how could I have predicted I was going to take that? Even when I joined the competitive marketing office at Intel, that was totally brand new. I was inventing that from scratch. And I have loved every job I've ever had in my career. And I could have never predicted. Mm. In fact, I would argue 5 years ago, I would have said over my dead body, well, I go to Amazon. I'm not going to do narratives and doc writing. And like, that's not a culture for me. And I love it here. So I am really thankful that I haven't had a career plan that I've like religiously stuck by. I love just kind of going with whatever pops up. And every time I've had a career opportunity pop up, you could just feel it in your soul of like, this is the right thing I should do.
That's awesome. I think your personality, I mean, I know you, but I'm getting to know you better. But even just talking with you, you embrace challenge, at least from my perspective. It looks like,
yeah,
you know, and you're open to risk taking.
Yes.
Which I think are so key for career growth.
Yeah. I think a lot of it just like do what scares you.
Yeah.
I remember Deb, she would talk about like, she was always looking for the biggest like fire. Like, where is something on fire? I'm gonna go over there and play with it and fix it. And I always love that personality of like, what is the scariest thing I could go do next? I mean, competitive marketing, that was terrifying. Of like, man, no one's quite doing it yet. Like, we're just kind of getting started. It doesn't exist. I don't really know what it is. I should do it.
So this leads me to, what does To Be Bolder mean to you?
Show up as your authentic self. Mm-hmm. Just be really fearless in who you are. Ask all the questions. Ask all the questions, right? And I think going back to like earning trust too, of like really showing up authentically helps to build that trust with people. And I mean, you want to feel like you're surrounding yourself with people that you can trust. And a lot of that just comes down to like, you know, being fearless and being bold.
That's fantastic. Before I let you go, fun questions for you. Quick, rapid fire, winter or summer?
I love them both. I'm going to say summer because our summers in Washington are really short. They're like, it rains 9 months and it doesn't get that hot here. So we fully embrace summer. We're outdoors every day when we have it.
Fiction or nonfiction?
Fiction. And even like one of my favorite authors is Patrick Lencioni, and he writes a lot of business books on culture and stuff like that, but he tells the story through a fable. Uh-huh. Like, I don't know if you've read his books before, but he's phenomenal because he has one like on the motive, like why do you become a manager? But he tells it through a fictional story of somebody who's trying to be the CEO. And then eventually he gets to like, okay, well, now that we've read that story, let me break it down for you.
That's cool.
Which I love that.
I'm going to ask you for other resources to send me, and then I'll include them in the show notes along with that one you just mentioned and then the working backwards. Dogs or cats? And I think I know this.
I grew up with cats. I love cats, but my husband won't let me get a cat. So I've had dogs most of my life, and I just got a puppy today. She's downstairs sleeping.
Beautiful. Pizza or pasta?
Pizza. all the way.
And coffee or tea?
Coffee. Cappuccino specifically.
Rachel, it's been awesome talking with you. Thank you for being here, sharing your story and helping other women kind of get a perspective into what you do.
Thank you so much for including me. This was so fun, Mary.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the episode today. It was really fun chatting with my guest. If you liked our show, please like it and share it with your friends. If you want to learn what we're up to, please go check out our website at 2bboulder.com. That's the number 2, little b, boulder.com.